Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the control operator for the Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we get together in front of our videos, and we chat, and we inform and educate each other and learn from each other and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night, our Memorial Weekend edition, for the Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. If you would like to reach me via email for TechNet puzzles, suggestions, or if you have expertise in the technology that's in the news, or you have a question that you would like answered on the Technical Net, but you won't have access to a radio, or if you want me to tap Paul, WS2N, on the shoulder and have him take a look at some space and NASA-related story and comment, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But you could reach me by email at the address mailbag@ac2gs.com. As always, I cut and paste interesting articles that I read throughout the week, and I put it on a link page. The link page is accessible by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. So we keep that up 24/7 for the foreseeable future. Some interesting articles if you're kind of bored or suffering a little case of insomnia. I found these articles interesting. I hope you will too. We have a chat room available. Last week it was rather busy. It's been quiet the past month or so. Other than that, you can get to it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And we offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and I keep the connection live the rest of the week. So if you're ever wondering what's going on the Glen Oaks repeater and you don't have a radio on you, you can just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the audio stream. In addition, I always like to remind people that Mike, AC2NJI, has a great archive site available. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has more than a million visitors, and it's an archive, among other things, for the Limark Technical Net. And its archives go all the way back to September of 2006. So there's a lot of wisdom out there from hams that have moved away, or unfortunately some that become silent keys over the years, but their wisdom is kind of frozen in amber in the form of MP3 files. You can download the MP3s, and you can play them whenever it's convenient for you. So avail yourself of that resource. That's it for the links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, nothing much in the way of interesting news to share with you at the top of the Technical Net. Artificial intelligence hasn't really done anything particularly special this week. There's an interesting new book that I'm going to be reading in the next week, hopefully, called Empire of AI. It's kind of a book about the modern-day artificial intelligence, OpenAI in particular, and Sam Altman in particular. Apparently, Sam Altman is another one of these guys who plays kind of fast and loose with facts. So, but it's made him a lot of money, and it'll probably make him a lot more. You know, he wants to be a trillionaire when he grows up. So that should be an interesting read. Anyway, we will have the usual questions, comments, and topics. I hope that the first few will be amateur radio related, but throughout the night, you know, if you have any science or technology related comments or questions or topics, I'll address them as they can. So we'll ask the people to hit that push to talk and give me their first name, their call sign, whether it's science or amateur radio related, and we'll put you on a list. Some of our people tend to have long discussions. Some have short questions. So I might juggle the list with the approval of the people involved. And that portion of the technical net should take us to approximately 10:15. Paul, US2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That will take us to approximately 11 p.m. when I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So as long as the laws of physics continue to work the way they're supposed to, and the repeater doesn't hiccup, and my shack doesn't hiccup, and I don't get thrown off of All Star, which probably is at least 60 to 70% chance of that, but most times I can recover and jump back onto the repeater. We'll see how things go. I'm looking forward to tonight. I appreciate everyone who showed up tonight because you know, Memorial Day weekend, a lot of people have a lot of other things planned, so I thank you all for that. So let the games begin. If you have any questions or comments or topics for discussion, hit the push to talk and ID yourself.
And 2HCN, how are you related?
Anyone want to put their name on the list for tonight? I realize that you know some people don't show up on time. They come a little late. So we probably still have some other people with some other questions, but I thought I'd just give everyone another opportunity if they have a question or a comment or a topic for discussion tonight, and they would like to kind of put their name up towards the top of the list instead of the bottom, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, gave you a chance. Unfortunately, this is the time that I remark that people shouldn't get unhappy if they show up late, you know, an hour late, and say, you know, why can't they get their question asked right now? Because I'm in the middle of talking to another person who showed up earlier and asked some questions. But that's rather somewhat pointless because those people don't hear me because they're showing up late. So it serves very little purpose. Anyway, we'll give you one last chance for this time, because we'll give you a lot of chances as the night progresses, or we might have a very slow and quiet night. It's been known to happen, not recently, but in the past. So again, if anyone would like to put their name on the list for questions, comments, or topics tonight, please hit that push to talk.
Echo 2, Yankee Golf is listening.
With topics and questions, but I'm not sure you heard me.
Yes, Wesley, you were recognized. I just thought maybe, you know, we could get something from one more person, because, you know, people kind of grouse later on when they show up late, but there's absolutely no way for me to get the attention of someone who hasn't turned their radio on yet. And Sam, AY2IG, I recognize you. I thank you for coming back. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Roy, I'm Echo 2, Yankee Golf, and by listening to you and reading your website.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think they're interesting articles. You know, when I see something, occasionally I'll see an interesting YouTube, and I'll put that on the list as well. And if I see a pretty picture, so you'll notice on my link page today, I actually grabbed a picture from one of the presentations from one of the articles that I linked to.
Yes, it's a beauty.
Yeah, some of these things are quite aesthetically pleasing. Well, once again, thank you, Sam. Okay, Wes, I guess you go first.
Okay, this is interesting. First, about AI. AI is building facility with Oracle, and actually it's kind of of the story. NVIDIA is trying to make a chip in the United States, but Oracle invests $40 billion in NVIDIA to build one of the world's largest data centers. So data center is not manufacturing facility. But at the same time, there are a few other companies that are trying to get to that facility, and its facility is enormous. It's in Abilene, Texas, and it's $500 billion initiative led by OpenAI, SoftBank, and if you don't mind to say a few words about it, I would appreciate it.
Okay, you got a bunch of things combined, and let's see. Number one, NVIDIA does not do any fabrication. They don't make any of those chips. They design the chips. They then contract the TSMC, a Taiwanese semiconductor manufacturer who is producing the leading edge technology chips that no other fabrication center is able to do. So the fabricators are TSMC. TSMC cut some kind of a deal with the United States that they would get a lot of tax benefits and seed money to build a large fabrication center in the United States, because when COVID shut everything down, we really kind of missed the fact that we had to ship our high-end chips from Taiwan, and also China keeps on threat Taiwan. So we really want a American factory. So the fabrication facilities, as far as I'm aware, is going to be managed by TSMC. So that's one thing. Another thing is artificial intelligence requires a lot of energy. So and they're running out of energy, and they're running out of server space. So a lot of companies are investing in server farms. Problem is you got to kind of find them near a place with energy. If you put up these devices, these buildings, these massive buildings that require megawatts, you basically are stealing electricity from the local inhabitants, and they will, in the end, will not be very happy. So there's talk amongst these tech guys to build small nuclear generators and all kinds of energy storage facilities. So that's another thing. That's part of the AI initiative that was discussed at the White House. At this point, as far as I'm aware, no one has actually promised anything. They've just said that they're going to do it, and if they don't do it, they're not penalized at all. So that $1 trillion that involves a lot of famous names has absolutely nothing so far behind it yet. May come to fruition. It may go completely away. And they use they pick a real bad name for it. They call it Star Wars, which reminds me of the Star Wars Initiative, which were laser satellites, which have nothing really to do with server farms. So I think I disconnected those conflicting things and reconnected them. Do you have any disagreements with that, Wesley?
Just one correction. It's not Star Wars, it's Stargate. And it's just Stargate, I believe. If you don't mind to check it out, because of the movie, there was a movie quite a few years ago, Stargate, where the sort of gate to the wormhole allowing to travel faster than light. Whatever. Science fiction stuff. But anyhow, there was the Creusot Energy System, the Blue Old Capital, and J.P. Morgan. I'm not sure what role Microsoft is playing in this project, but it's 875 acres. So it's like humongous something that is created. So if you could express your feelings, like make more consistent picture of it. Back to you.
Well, again, I'm kind of unsure. Yeah, you're quite right. I mixed up Star Wars with Stargate. They were both movies. It's still a foolish name for a product. It has absolutely nothing to do with nothing. And it wasn't a great movie. It wasn't a great series. And problem with all these tech bro guys is they have this uncontrollable desire to name things after stuff that they vaguely watch, and you get tech bro points for alluding to. Elon made a comment that he had named his artificial intelligence Grok in honor of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Unfortunately, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy doesn't mention Grok. The book that mentions Grok was Robert Heinlein's A Stranger in a New Land, which he wrote about 30 years before Hitchhiker's Guide. So these guys kind of get it wrong. So, again, not quite sure why it should be called Stargate. They're very vague on what they're doing. It sounds like a theoretical massive server facility to run all of the NVIDIA hardware and such. But like I said, it's vague, and it's only just kind of press releases at this point. I don't think they've bought the land. I don't think they've started construction. And matter of fact, as I recall it, Elon had some nasty things to say about Sam, the OpenAI guy, that it was all nonsense and they didn't have the money to do this. So there's a little disagreement among the tech bros out there.
Okay. First, tell me, am I loud and clear right now? Because the last time I was soft in my voice.
Yeah, it's kind of in the middle. It could be a little bit louder, but it's okay.
Okay. Did a ham radio come? FTC laws, the Federal Trade Commission laws. We had a discussion with Dr. Roy, and he expressed his opinion. Dr. Roy, please.
Theoretically, yes. The problem was, and some people heard about it and some people didn't, the Yaesu had a waiting list for their newest transceiver. And there were people who paid a deposit and were on the waiting list, and you had other people who just wandered into the ham convention, and the dealer had some models for sale that he was showing, and he sold models for people who weren't on any waiting list. So the guy who spent money with a deposit for the waiting list is threatening to take everyone to court. And theoretically, it is an FTC violation, and theoretically, I assume Yaesu will make good and find an extra one of those transceivers and ship it over to him so he'll quiet down. But I also mentioned that, I don't know if the FTC is functioning the way it's supposed to these days. So I wouldn't kind of depend on the FTC right now, but I think that the Yaesu doesn't like the bad press. And the distributor, the retailer, doesn't need the bad press either, but sometimes distributors, retailers, surprisingly don't care.
Okay. And to experience. So it looks like it's not Yaesu is innocent. It's like a greedy guy who wants to make some buck on Yaesu radios decided that they want to treat the ham radio operators like money-making machines without any rules. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, retailers will do that. And if you push them against the wall, they'll start to tell you about how their margin is razor thin and they're barely subsisting. So, you know, they have a guy who's sitting at home and he already gave them money to have one in, at the front of the line, but they have this other guy with a credit card who's ready to buy. So, you know, better in their minds to sell it to the guy in front, and when they get around to it, the guy who already paid them, they'll ship them one of those models. But, you know, the first one that comes with actual money in their hands, so much for waiting list. But, you know, it's the retailer kind of, it's all the retailer's fault. I wouldn't blame the manufacturer in the slightest. It was a complete screw-up of the retailer at the convention. He just wanted to jump and make as much money as he could.
Copy?
Yeah, you're going in and out of the repeater, but I heard the, do you copy?
Okay. I heard that HRO had like a monopoly on the units, and that's where the problems arose. In other words, HRO has so many orders filled, whereas people who were on the wait list elsewhere, suffered. And I believe that was like an issue that came up in connection with the distribution of the Yasus. Back to you, Roy.
Oh, okay. I don't recall who the retailer was that this guy was on the waiting list. I kind of drew the conclusion, perhaps incorrectly, that it was HRO as well. But I could be wrong. Anyone offhand know who, what retailer he was on a waiting list for? I'm hearing a little bit of a carrier, but no audio. So if that was you, Sam, if you can kind of maneuver your position a little bit better. No, I'm not getting a signal. So whoever that might be, if you could raise the gain or take the handy talkie to the window or do something to kind of improve your ability to capture our repeater. I guess not, Wesley. Well, we'll see how this develops. Sam, you're about 95% noise. So, Wesley, I think we kind of discussed this as much as, you know, we could discuss it. We'll see if Yaesu makes good or this guy just kind of fumes in the background.
Okay, enter AGM. Can you transmit on two radios at the same time? So, if we have ICOM 7610 or two ICOM 7610, and you operate on different frequencies, but they made ICPW2. It is 1 kilowatt output, full duty cycle, single operator, two radios, amplifier. So you have two radios and you have 1 kilowatt amplifier that could accept transmission from two transceivers at the very same time, and then you can transmit. So the question first that I asked Dr. Roy was, can we make a QSO at the very same time on two different bands and two different frequencies? I received the answer, and then there was a number of questions. So maybe the first question, Dr. Roy?
Okay, I imagine it to you. There are radios that have done that for years. My Flex radio, my Flex 6700 does it. There are other models of Flex, the 6600, I think, does it. There's lots of radios that do it. There's nothing special. For the most part, these are for contesters, and they usually are not transmitting simultaneously using both of those radios. What usually happens is it kind of goes back and forth. They tend to, a lot of times it's contesters, DXers who are listening on one frequency and transmitting on another frequency, or something else is going on, so that, you know, they'll talk on one transmitter and then they'll listen, and while they're listening they might switch over and talk to the other transmitter, so they don't have to run any kind of switches back and forth. It's just a matter of where you put the output signal in. So it's done, and there are log and contesting programs that are designed to operate with that. N1MM has a module for that. It's called SO2R, single operator two radios. So it's done. So that's the simple answer to probably a simpler question.
Okay, so after that, you responded with quite an understandable answer, and I was asking additional information. So I understand that it is possible to have a two QSO at the same time, but how it is physically possible to handle two QSO with two different stations at two different bands at the same time? If it is a CW and there is a recorded message that is handling transmission, then it will be no fun talking to the machine. It's like talking to AI. You got the answer. So in the future, AI may handle receiving a transmission on CW with standardized text, changing only call sign, operator, and operator name. However, I don't see how I could handle QSO with voice on two different bands in the same time and respect the person that is talking to me. Back to you.
Well, again, what we're talking about is usually designated SO2R. And as I said right before, it's not that the one guy is having two simultaneous conversations with two different comments at the same time, because their vocal cords usually can't do things like that. It's simply, for some people, for contesting, if you had to shift from one band and one frequency to another band and another frequency back and forth repeatedly, it would get rather tiresome, slow you down, and increase your fatigue. So it's basically, you have two radios. You don't talk through them simultaneously, but you listen with one ear while you talk in the other microphone, and then you pick up the other microphone and you hear in the other ear the first guy responding to you. And, you know, some people can kind of work kind of ultra duplex. So it's not a magic trick where one guy is speaking two different things to two different radios at the same instant. It's simply set up so that all you have to do is hit the push talk on whatever radio you want, and you're in a different radio with different frequencies and even modes.
Okay, and then you log it as 2 QSO or 1 QSO, and how do you log it?
As 2 QSOs. It's, like I said, N1MM has that facility. You can get a module for SO2R, and it's two entries because one radio is set to one band and the other is set to another band. So it couldn't be the same QSO. I guess theoretically, had a guy who's doing it SO2R on the other end, you know, you could have some weird thing where you know, you're talking to him on 40 and he's responding on 20, so it's sort of the same QSO, but it's two different frequencies, so I think the log is an entry for both of those.
Okay. So, theoretically, on CW with the headset on it, we could have two operators with two different call signs operating from the same amplifier and two different transceivers, right?
Yeah, but that's not single operator, two radios. And that's, I thought, what we were talking about.
Yes. I was just exercising possibilities.
Okay. I still don't know what that has with SO2R, but okay.
Okay. We have a one amplifier, 1 kilowatt. We have two radios. We have two operators. They cannot talk at the same time because they will be messing up with each other. But they could use CW and headsets, each one connected to each radio, and that will allow two different operators with two different call signs to work on the same set of hardware vectors.
Okay. I again don't really see the point of the exercise. To get a kind of specialized linear amplifier that takes two simultaneous input and amplifies two channels, it's probably cheaper to just have each guy buy their own linear amplifier when you add up the price. So again, these particular amplifiers are not really designed to kind of merge two operators into one set of controls. It's primarily for single operators who want to have the extra flexibility of going back and forth between two different bands with the least amount of switching going back and forth.
Okay. So let me go to another one. N6ARA, Tiny MIDI. So I was looking at that care that is in different forms. It's called 64 DOS. So it's capacitive touch. So the finger acts as in addition to the one plate of the capacitor, and when you're touching the iambic paddle, which is only 3.5 millimeters, so 1/8 key adapter, to plug directly into that is made to be plugged directly into USB-C phone or computer for quick and easy portable operation with the smart SDR, which would be Plex, let's say, SDR control, let's say, ICOM, or more CW practice, or VIAL, which would be the V-band, right, apps. So it is powered by USB and uses a Bluetooth low energy BLI to emulate BLE to emulate MIDI or keyboard device. I was reading from the text. So in other words, it was. Let me drop. Okay. So it wasn't really about that. But when I was looking at the production of different keys or different devices that are dedicated to ham radio operators, which were mostly puzzles, I look at it and I found it extremely, extremely good made. So it is. Some of them are from plastic and metal. Some of them are metal. It was really good. So that the BLEMIDI it could be used, or keyboard controller could be used for CW, built-in capacitive paddle, 3.5 millimeter T jack for external keys paddles, connection interface, Bluetooth, low energy BLI, really, whatever. Power input USB-C. Compatible both adapters, and it costs only $64, 99 cents. So for somebody who wants to operate SOTA from or operate from the remote location, I see, and loves CW, that is something interesting. But Dr. Roy made a comment on email to me, Dr. Roy.
I don't remember commenting about the keypad. I'm not a CW operator, although I have a really nice English-made chrome IATIC paddle with magnetic controls on it, and it's called the Chevron. Very nice. Two guys built them in their garages for a bunch of years, and I think they've retired. So the only place you can get a Chevron days is used. Nevertheless, I don't know if I'd like to have a capacitively actuated paddle. I kind of like the swing back and forth of Morse code keys, side swipers or iambics. I'm curious, our main CW guy here is Paul. Have you ever used any of these really tiny, itty-bitty QRP capacitively actuated paddles?
Yeah, I agree with you. I believe it is very hard to use because you have to make sure that your finger is at quite good distance from the paddle, because if it's capacitive, the capacitance actually grows when you're closer, when your finger is closer to the side of the paddle. So I don't believe that's something that is good for permanent location, but for working on Pota Sota or if you travel, I think, and you love the CW, I think it's good. Now, the comment that you made is you were talking about K-Kron manufacturer, and that was and they sold a station on eBay. Then you were talking about retailers at Amazon or Walmart. Do you recall that?
Oh, okay. It has absolutely nothing. Oh, Paul, we'll get back to that in a second, Wes. Paul, have you ever had any experience with these mini toy Morse code keys that use capacitive actuation instead of mechanical pressure on a key?
No, I haven't. I'd love to try it, but my guess is I'd probably fall back to the iambic. That's what I use. I'm very happy with that. And the iambic, you could do a period. You just squeeze both at the same time. Like this. Anyway. I'm happy with the iambic. I would give it a try, but no, not yet. Back to you, Art.
Yeah, I I'm not a big CW, but it's you know, I like the mechanical feel of the give and take of going in and out. And in addition to iambic keys, there are side swiper keys that aren't able to, you can't squeeze both buttons together. You just kind of, a lot of the side swipers are a single paddle that either goes right or left. You can set them which side you want to be a dit and what side you want them to be a da.
Yeah, I could do that with this as well, but yeah, if you're lefty or righty. But yeah, I'm righty, so I just, it's still standard. I never changed it. Yeah, that's important if you're lefty.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people, unfortunately, use their iambic keys as side swipers. It's not that difficult to maneuver. Begalia, which is a lovely manufacturer of really beautiful Morse code keys, has one or two models that actually have a switch that switches it back and forth from a side swiper to an iambic. You know, when you put the mechanical switch in the right position, it locks the two paddles together into a single solid paddle, and it becomes purely a side swiper.
That's okay. Now I have a button on mine. By the way, I use the MFJ Kia paddle, and I have a button I can switch. It duplicates a buzz, you know, where the dots repeat, you know, but the dashes you would have to do independently. But you know, I don't use that. I just use it as a regular key. But capacitive. That sounds interesting. It sounds like Wesley came across this. I have not seen it. Is it an expensive thing? What are we talking about here? Back to you, Ron.
Yeah, it's just $65.
Oh, that's okay. Very good. Yeah, I would try it. Does Wes ever get on CW or no?
Do you, Wesley?
Yes, I am.
I should work you on 81 of these nights when it's open. But yeah, very good. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Getting back to that other subject, it really had nothing to, it just kind of coincided with the email, but it had nothing to do with small CW keys. Now, I was alluding to the fact that in some cases, it seems that the Chinese know some ways of getting around tariffs. It's not a wholesale method. It seems to be an individual either retailer or a manufacturer that maintains a retail website in China that, you know, they, if you ask them whether you're going to get charged the tariff, they tell you that no, they use a shipping a business that doesn't, that you don't have to pay any kind of tariff as far as it's concerned. So and I bought two things from China, and that seems to be the case. So I think the big guys like Walmart and Amazon don't have access to these little cracks in the wall. But you know, if you buy through eBay and you're lucky, somehow they get around it. I don't know how, but they didn't give me any details. But I paid what I would have paid a month ago for the things that went.
Yeah, and to HCN. So it looks like everybody from us would be happy to have a minimum tool, tools, a set of tools for ham radio operator to do make something or repair something or broken wire, so solar gun, maybe oscilloscope, maybe a spectrum analyzer, and right now it looks like everybody has a nano VNA. So we see what's going to happen with the prices. The next one was for Roy to talk about it on the TechNet, but I'm not sure if Dr. Roy wants to continue that. You said few words last time, but not many. There is a Flex Radio 500 watts output. So would you just say a few words, please?
Okay, but I mean, ultimately, you kind of said all that they released. It's Flex Radio has had different series. They had the 1000 originally, and they actually showed the design in QST. I think it was 2 months issues. So you could build it yourself, or you could buy a kit, or you could have them put the kit together. Then they brought out the 3000 and the 5000. Then they brought out the my beloved 6000 series, the 6700, the 6500, the 6300, I think. Then they upgraded the 6300 to a 6400, and the 6600, 6500 to a 6600, and now recently they brought out the 8000 series. So the less expensive of the three, the cheapest and the next to cheapest, they brought out as the 8000 with either a blank box with no display or with a tablet stuck on the front. So that was the 8000 series, and now they announced at this last convention the 500 series, I think, in which they basically take similar electronics to the 8300 and the 8600, I think, and they slap on a 500 watt linear amplifier to it, and instead of just power leads to an external power supply, it has its own built-in switching power supply. So if for whatever reason you want a SWIR-defined radio like a Flex with either one physical receiver transmitter or two physical receiver transmitters, but you want it to have an output of 500, the 500 series, I guess, is for you. It's not for me, but it might be for you.
Okay. And the next topic to discuss is American made. So, and we're coming to CW Alambic bottles with Morse code that were shown on convention in Dayton. I was kind of impressed. There is a company, I mean, and I wonder how nameless pop is actually made. So, Modern Morse Code Workshop in St. Louis. I'm not giving the name because it looks like advertisement. I'm not trying to advertise anybody. But I'm talking about American quality, where you have aluminum blocks, the precision CNC work and PCB design that is absolutely outstanding, shocking. So, I'm not sure how much you are into mechanics, guys. I'm practically and theoretically quite well, or say even more than that. I have worked at all possible 3 to 5 axis CNCs, and as well as lathes and mills. Presses, including plastic and metal molding, EDM, and so on. So the guy has a typical that manufacturer has. It's a small CNC shop. Nothing special, but he does powder coating. And that actually made me wow. Usually, to make a manufacturing chip, people take the aluminum and they anodize it. So you have a different color. Looks okay. Nothing new. But powder coating. So, yes, anodizing could be done by them too. But I assume that they do not do anodizing because they don't have the facility. And they were saying a few words, actually not them, but there was some guy that was talking on a Hamvention in Dayton, and they say, well, we do powder coating because anodizing is not conductive, so that finish that is in different color is not conductive. Well, you could mill it out of those few thousand, you could have it conductive. So this is not an excuse. Let me drop. I think I over time the repeater. Can you still hear me, Victoria?
Yeah, you're fine. You didn't have any dropouts.
Okay. So the Dexmo company doesn't have anodizing valve and the transformer, because the transformer has to have a sufficient power, and usually it's oil field transformer, humongous one. The painting, if we could use the terminology, is time-consuming, but for the manufacturer, it is less expensive than paying for anodizing. And you need an oven for it too, and that is cost of energy. So the guy is trying to make something within his workshop, a small manufacturing facility, and I believe he does it good. Now, if we're talking about powder coating, the old microscopes, they were powder coated. So it was 1937, 1942. And then this technology was kind of interesting with the cookware. We had a powder coating on aluminum because it sticks good to aluminum. But it is almost forgotten classical American craftsmanship, compatible to Swiss and German and Austrian quality. I know your opinion, Dr. Roy, about Swiss watches, but you are making a big error thinking that about other mechanical products from that part of EU too, like you're thinking about the watches. German and Swiss are the best and likely the most expensive CNCs in the world. But the guy uses the regular, not so good quality Haas CNC, H-A-A-S CNCs. I mean, good, but not shockingly good. So the working in metal manufacturing tools is EU, not USA. But some American fathers made their sons follow the good American tradition of quality that is not that is now desecrated by Chinese junk. We have a very controversial, self-oriented, narcissistic, damaged master, a person that doesn't care about us but about himself. Back to you for any comment.
KC2GS. Well, going back to my comment, my comment way back was, the Swiss are kind of known for precision equipment. Everything is within the same measuring specs as the other thing. There's a certain uniformity. A lot of those things are handmade and uniform. which is nice, but there's a difference between precision and accuracy, and that's kind of an obvious thing with watches. You could make a very precise watch gears and mechanism, but the point, as far as I see it, is the point of a watch is to tell accurate time. And when a $25 Japanese or even Chinese quartz-driven movement can be more accurate than a $20,000 Rolex, there's something wrong someplace. So that's what I was alluding to. You know, German manufacturer and Swiss manufacturer is excellent. They tend to be obsessive compulsives, which are great if you're the customer and terrible if you're the poor guy who's working for them. But, you know, I mean, different strokes for different folks. CWTs come all around the world. I think most people who are really into Morse code key porn really like Bengali keys. They're quite aesthetically pleasing. Italians, I hate to make a generalization, but they have a knack for the aesthetic. You know, Kent, I have a Kent key. It's very functional. It was made in the UK. My Chevron was made in the UK. I tend to find the N3KD or something. They seem to have a little too much exposed screw heads and things. They have a very kind of mechanical appearance. If you like that, tend not to. Most of the screws in my keys are kind of hidden. They're not kind of a major element of the aesthetics.
Oh, I understand that. Enter HGM. I was kind of interested with a early 20th century and late 20th century equipment, late mills, metallurgy, all of that. Actually, I have a subject for it, so I'm going to go to it. But anyhow, I saw that precision. And talking about Haas is American-made. They make good mills and good lathes. Not much about that, but nothing special. Nothing that is breathtaking. So it looks like if you want to have a jewel, you need to look at Japanese or you look at European, and they really make this stuff. Now, the next subject to discuss is, can I work SOTA Station QRP with Hermes Light 2? So Hermes Light 2 is QRP, right? But the guy, in his video, he shows 2 kilowatt amplifier, and I find it funny. He says, "Well, yeah, I just give 5 watts to that amplifier, and I'm getting 400 watts out, and that's 2 kilowatts MHT1803 DMOS amplifier built. It's a nice amplifier with the." 3 antennas at the back of the radio. They also make a kit. So when I went to the website of that LDMOS manufacturing, let me open up the link. So this way. So it's a VK3 amp. Now, interesting thing is about the VK3 amp is that they have a kit. So if somebody wants to make an amplifier for himself, or instead of buying it, you can buy it. I'm not sure if it's going to be much cheaper at all, because when I'm looking about the modules, they're $135, $100, $99. The 54 megahertz directional coupler is WR bridge, $230 and whatsoever. So they have a kit, but anyhow, I think that the information is helpful to the ham radio community. Back to you.
Okay, it's a bit overkill.